From listener-supported KTOO, welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan and on demand as a podcast. It's Friday, October 25th, 2024. I'm your host, Boston Christopher Gwyneth Cheesh. Hawa, Toksuk Newsom, Slama, thank you for joining the conversation. Today, we are joined by folks from the American Red Cross, which is holding an open house next Wednesday, October 30th, where you will find out how to become a volunteer in times of need. Waipuna, a music group that's expanding the boundaries and expectations of today's Hawaiian music, is in studio to chat about their concert in Juneau Saturday night as part of the Jack's Golden Hour concert series. Next week is Halloween, of course, and the JDHS Yada'akathle Ignite Farm Club joins us to preview their creepy crawly meet and greet happening on Wednesday evening, October 30th. And Mudrooms, the community storytelling event, has a workshop happening on November 3rd, plus a special surprise announcement. Those conversations plus Tongass Voices coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon.
Support from Hanson Gress, seeking curious people who like technology, network engineering, and customer support. Opportunities for those who thrive on problem solving. Details at hansongress.com/careers.
This is Juno Afternoon. I want to do a quick roundup before we begin. I'm not sure how, but it seems like something was in the water for scheduling events on Saturday, October 26th, which is tomorrow. Many folks have come on the show to chat about their events, but I thought it would be a nice addition on today's show to just run down the list of those that were on the show, plus some additional ones. I mean, Juno, you are amazing. This community offers so much and brings joy to so many in a wonderful variety of ways. So here we go. Love Letters from Juno Ghostlight Theater opens tonight and runs for 3 weeks. JunoGhostlight.com for more. Mendenhall Minis, Outdoor Explorers for kids 3 to 7 at 10:30 tomorrow at the Mendenhall Visitors Center. Bartlett Beginnings Real Talk Walk/Run at 9 a.m. at the Airport Trail, no registration required. Cancer Connections Community Health Forum from 11 to 12 at Centennial Hall. Self-Song Meditations 4-class course begins tomorrow. You can get info at info.selfsong@gmail.com. info.selfsong@gmail.com. Trinity Church's Cookie Jar Benefit Sale from 1 to 3 at the Trinity Episcopal Church. Janae Simone, author of Teaching in the Dark at Mendenhall Library at 2 p.m. This is all tomorrow, by the way. Filipino American History Month special dinner in Boca Alupo. Check their Instagram for more. Waipuna in concert at the Jack at 7 p.m. Plus, Playboy Spaceman has an album release concert at the Crystal Saloon tomorrow night. And Halloween events abound as well. Halloween Half Scarathon from the Roadrunners. Check Facebook or southeastroadrunners.org for more information. Spooky Space Family Show. Matinees at the Marie Drake Planetarium. Juno Drag, The Heels Have Eyes at the Red Dog Saloon tomorrow night at 7 p.m. The Rocky Horror Picture Show Movie and Shadow Cast event at the Gold Town. They have two shows, 8:30 and 11. Night of Frights continues up at Eagle Crest Ski Area. The Firefighters Association Haunted House is out on Sherwood Lane. And of course, a myriad of other haunted house type events. Check out the Juno Community Collective on Facebook for many of those. A lot of those are listed on that Juno Community Collective there on Facebook. It is just amazing how much stuff is happening tomorrow here in Juno. I love this town. I love this community. And you're all showing up on this Saturday, October 26th. This is Juno Afternoon. We'll be back with the American Red Cross right after this.
You're listening to KTOO's Tlingit Word of the Week. This week's word comes from Kushtuk'u Bill Fawcett. The word this week is siu.
Siu.
That means rain. And here's a sentence.
Siu. Kunaktak wasitan.
It's really raining. Let's hear it again.
Siu.
Rain. Gunaschishtu Khune Lance Twitchell, Goldbelt Heritage Foundation, and the University of Alaska Southeast for this audio.
Kushtak o ish Bill Fawcett was Slukach Adi and the child of a southern Toshone man who passed away before Bill was born. His mother later married Tsihua Bill Fawcett, who helped raise Bill. He lived on Akkwan Ani and enjoyed working with advanced language learners, helping them answer difficult questions about the language.
And tune in next week for another Tlingit Word of the Week from KTOO.
You are listening to community-supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm Boston Christopher. Southeast Alaska, and of course right here in Juneau, has been hit with multiple disasters of late, as has the entire country. And you are wondering how you might be able to help. Of course, you can make donations to a variety of worthy causes, but you can also get boots on the ground and volunteer your time and efforts. The local American Red Cross is going to be hosting an open house next Wednesday, October 30th, to talk about how you can become a volunteer and the areas of most need. I'm joined now by Britta Tonneson, Southeast Alaska Disaster Program Manager, and Tungi Lebrecht, CEO of the American Red Cross of Alaska. Gunathchishat ye adi, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you both here today. Wasiati, how's it going?
It's going really well.
Awesome. And Tungi, how are you?
Going quite well. I'm going to sheesh for having us on. Thank you.
Absolutely. So let's talk a little bit about this. I want to put this out there right away because I don't think some people know this, but 90% of the Red Cross is voluntary service. And they depend on, you depend on the volunteers. That is just something that must happen. And everyone, of course, is welcome. So tell us a little bit about this event that you're going to be having next Wednesday, and then we can get into the specifics of what kinds of things are needed as well. Tell us a little bit about Wednesday.
Sure. Well, thank you for hosting us. So as you mentioned, voluntary service is a critical piece of our humanitarian mission. We have fundamental principles, and that allows us to be humanitarians because we're not doing it for what we receive. We're doing it as part of our principle. 90%. We could always use more volunteers. We've had a lot of local disasters. We've had major national disasters. And our regional disaster officer who leads our disaster cycle services will be in town next week. And so I thought it'd be a great opportunity for people who have been moved locally to join, ask questions, get to know us, see the office, and create that connection.
That's fantastic. And I know a lot of times when we hear about the hurricanes down south or we hear of other disasters, the Red Cross is one of the first things that comes up for people to help out. There's such a variety of areas that you help out in. Tungi, can you give us sort of an overview about what kinds of things the Red Cross responds to and the most need that you have right now for volunteers?
Absolutely. Well, what you hear about the most, most common thing is single-family fires and multifamily fires that occur across the country. But as you've seen in the Southeast, landslides and mudslides and all kinds of things, the glacial outbursts and so on, the need is great. And we're finding more and more, whereas 10 years ago, there were about $2 billion individual disasters per year. We had 28 last year across the country. So for whatever reason it is, whether it's the climate crisis or whatever it is that is causing that, we're being called more than ever to help. What does that mean? That means that there no longer is just a hurricane season or tornado season or necessarily whatever it might be, the landslides or whatever. There are certainly times of year where things happen more often than not, but we're finding that we're in a constant need. And that means a constant need for volunteers, a constant need for donations, a constant need for new expertise as well, too. So that's why we need the volunteers. I'm very fortunate as a CEO to have about 20 employees across the state, but I have between 400 and 500 volunteers at any point in time. So the Red Cross is able to mobilize those volunteers when there is a disaster, and we're able to do things like help folks with things like cleaning and hygiene supplies. We do mental health care, disaster mental health. We do spiritual health care. We provide financial resources for families as well, too. And we really just provide comfort and care so that they know that they're not alone. Now, we don't do that alone either. I think, as Britta would tell you, we work with a lot of partners, and she could tell you a little bit about that too, but we work with a lot of partners to help us with the feeding and with a lot of the care for all these folks. But it's anything from a single family fire to a hurricane to a landslide, any means, any kind of natural disaster, the Red Cross is going to be there to help, as well as a lot of times other disasters that you just don't hear about behind the scenes. Basically, if there's a human need, there's a humanitarian need, the Red Cross is going to step in with our volunteers. That's why we need more volunteers. More volunteers, and then, of course, the donations to support those efforts.
Now, Britta, in the sense of the kinds of volunteers, I know there's different areas of focus that people can volunteer their time, and I know one in particular that you're looking for is shelter volunteers. Can you tell us about what a shelter volunteer is?
Yeah. So shelter volunteers, depending on the type of disaster, if it's one that we're expecting, like a hurricane, might be pre-positioned. If it's something that is without little notice, a no-notice disaster, then they would be called on call to help set up shelters in a designated location, receive people, and provide that immediate assistance and safety and protection. A shelter is also a place that becomes a central focus point for different agencies to provide services for impacted persons as well. It can be a hub for people to get information, maybe not the community, but for the people who have been displaced. So shelter volunteers, you can start as a service associate, which is just an entry level, and move your way up to management of those shelters. And depending on your location and partners involved, help support those efforts for people who have been displaced to get them access to resources and the information they need.
And besides coming to this event next Wednesday, what is the best way if someone locally here wants to volunteer? What should they do?
You can reach out to your local office by calling 1-800-RED-CROSS will get you anything you need for the Red Cross. So calling that is probably the easiest number. You can go to redcross.org/volunteer and find out more information online. We have an Alaska webpage with additional information, and you can start your application.
Yeah, because I figure like Alaska is large enough that there might be need just here, right? In terms of, I know we need in Juneau, and obviously there's around Southeast. We've been reporting on all kinds of things that have been happening, of course, and then nationally too. So, and if somebody wanted to be here in Juneau, Tungi, but go help out in Florida, is that something that's possible for someone to do?
Absolutely. So what we would have them do, again, is, as Britta said, go to redcross.org and sign up as a volunteer. It's the first step there. Because the need is so great, she mentioned pre-positioning. To give you an example, for Hurricane Helene, we had 1,200 people that were there before the hurricane even hit. And through that and through working with our partners, we served 2.3 million meals and snacks so far. So can you imagine the amount of volunteers that it takes to do that? So we mobilize people from all over the country. And then think about this, as she mentioned, about the amount of care that you're doing, whether you are a shelter associate or a shelter supervisor. Those things are long and enthralling in being able to help others, but also tiring. So after 2 weeks, 2 to 3 weeks, folks then, typically it's a 2-week deployment, but those folks come back home and then we need somebody to replace them. And then also, while we have all those folks, and we have quite a few folks out from Alaska right now, we have about 15 that are out right now just in Lower 48, but we'll replace those. And then while they're gone with their specialties, we need people right here at home. We need people in Juneau. We need people statewide to take care of events as they happen here, right? So we would love for people to deploy out if they want to get that skill set that they need, and there's an opportunity that meets something that they are qualified for and interested to do, we'll provide that training. And then we need people to stay behind as well, too, and to help. So it's a year-round effort for us.
It sounds like there's a lot of need, of course, and you can find a spot for people's skills and talents to be helpful in whatever way that might be. I know that in addition to the shelter support, you also have a disaster action team. Tell us a little bit about that, Britta.
Yeah, so I had the numbers pulled, and just from the start of this fiscal year, so July 1st, Southeast has responded to nearly 40, or we have nearly 40 cases, I should say, and we have supported nearly 130 clients. Half of those cases have been to single-family fires, multi-family fires, whatnot. The other half was the glacial dam outburst and the Ketchikan landslide. So we have volunteers who are on call every day of the year, and they're responding to those single-family and multi-family fires. And what that looks like a lot of the time is showing up in person while people's homes are on fire, providing water, blankets, snacks, being an ear, helping work with the fire departments as their home is being cared for, and then making sure they have a safe place to go that night. Sometimes it's the next day, depending on the situation. And since we're Southeast in an island geography, we do a lot of our work virtually to support some of the communities. So those volunteers take the training necessary to be able to show up safely in person, provide that compassionate ear and support, and then maybe provide some financial tools or otherwise. So that's one thing that the disaster action team does. And then they work in conjunction with our caseworkers and recovery volunteers who do follow up and provide additional support and outreach to local organizations and resources, depending on what some of their roadblocks to recovery might be and their specific family needs might be.
That's awesome. There's always a need for volunteers. The best place, as we said, was to call 800-RED-CROSS or go to redcross.org/volunteer. That will get you some of the information you need to be able to find the right place that you can fit in and volunteer and help out the Red Cross. We know there's a need locally, statewide, of course, and Southeast, and of course, nationally. We're hearing about all sorts of things. So Tungi, Britta, thank you so much for coming on and sharing with us this opportunity to get out and be part of our community service. I really appreciate you being here today.
Thanks for hosting.
We appreciate the opportunity.
We look forward to seeing people Wednesday, 4 to 6:30 at the Red Cross office in Lemon Creek, if you can show up.
Absolutely. Red Cross in Lemon Creek. Yeah.
And we'll take whatever you got from the volunteer hours and time that you have. That's one thing that's important, is it's up to your schedule and what your availability is. So you can certainly work with Britta and her folks or any of us statewide. And we want to look at your skill set and also your availability. But we know that you have a lot of hearts and big hearts and volunteers in Juneau, and they're all very busy. But we'd love to see you out there.
Love it. Next Wednesday, October 30th from 4 to 6 at the Red Cross office in Lemon Creek. Thank you so much. Gunath Jeesh.
Thank you.
Gunath Jeesh.
KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Occoquan. The Clan-A-D have stewarded this area for thousands of years. Today, our studios sit on a spot once part of the tidelands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. We recognize those families who traveled to and from these tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages, and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations. This is Juneau Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. That's Waipuna, the award-winning Hawaiian music band. The Trio of Kale, Matt, and David continually tour and bring their music around the world. They are in Juneau as part of the Golden Hour concert series being presented by the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council. They will play tomorrow night at the Juneau Arts and Culture Center at 7 p.m. For more, visit jahc.org. You can also find out more about their music at waipunamusic.com, waipunamusic.com. Gunath Jeesh, mahalo. Thank you for being here today. It's a pleasure to have you all in the studio.
Aloha.
Aloha.
Nice. So it's so cool. And you just got here today, I'm assuming?
Yes.
Just off the plane?
Yes. Two planes.
Two planes. I love it.
Two delayed planes.
So tell me a little bit about the group. Was formed in like 2008 by two of the original members here. I know, where's David? David's over here. You came a little bit later.
Yeah.
So one of you, can you tell me about where did the idea come to make this band happen? Because I know you're taking like traditional music, but also trying to contemporize it. And so tell us a little bit about that.
Okay, so Kali and I... I'm trying to narrow it down because I can talk about an hour about this.
Sure.
But, you know, started back in 2007. And, Kali and I, we knew of each other, but we never played with each other before. I think we just gigged maybe once or twice. And it was a performance in Japan that I was asked to go to Japan and perform because they're performing this what we call a hoike, which is like how would you say hoike,
it's like a dance performance concert, if you will.
So I did a recording back in 2003, and that the basis of this performance was based upon a song that I recorded. And so that Kumuhula, or teacher of the hula, asked me, I want you to come up, bring your band. And I was playing with a couple of bands at that time. But because it was such a short notice, we only had a month to do this. I called all my guys. Nobody could make it. I played with Kale just a couple of times, but, you know, just a little gig here and there and whatnot. But, and he was one of the last guys on my list because...
How does that feel, Kyle?
Last on your list. First in your heart.
That's right.
But he was just an acquaintance of mine. You know, I had many friends that I would play on a regular basis with. Nobody could make it. Or they would say, I would ask, can you make it? And then I hear nothing for them for a couple of weeks. And so that's, he was wanting to give me an answer in 20 minutes.
Ikimasho.
So I said,
let's go.
So we
Japanese.
We went there, and then, you know, that was the first time we ever played together, both of us together. And then we came back to Hawaii. We said our goodbyes, but then, you know, we kept close. And it was another gig that he said, I want you to come and join me. And then we played for the first time in Hawaii as a duo to two people.
In a bar.
In a bar. But that bar there was kind of like what put us together, because we started to really define a sound and realize we might have something here.
Yeah.
And that was a starting of that. So that was in the ending of 2007. By 2008, we established a name called Waipuna. That comes from a street name that I grew up on. The street I grew up on was called Kawaipuna Street. And Waipuna means spring water. But in the Hawaiian spoke, they never... They were not that literal. It meant so much more. My grandfather said, Waipuna doesn't just mean spring water. It means a source of the spring where the water first exits the earth.
Oh.
Right? Because when that water comes out of the ground, it went through a cycle. It started as rain, and it goes down into the earth. It percolates on the earth, and maybe 30, 60 years later, it comes back forth. That is the true essence of what Waipuna means. It went through a cycle. So that's how we kind of started our music, where we wanted to take old songs from old times, you know, from my grandfathers and my great-grandfathers and grandmothers sang, and put our new breath. And that where we coming out, that is the Waipuna. That is the spring that's coming out from an old source.
Oh, that's kind of cool. So how does that manifest itself in the music? You take an old song, and then what do you do to it in your rehearsals or when you're thinking about it? Like, what do you do to change it?
I think the thing that... very quickly irritated me about Matt when we were working on our second album.
Was that he called you last? No, I'm just kidding.
So he and I, we to prepare for our second album. The first album of any group is basically the best of whatever you've been doing in the bars, or, you know, while you're making your bones and building your sound. And a lot of it are remakes and so on and so forth. But when we took that next step to do the second album, we took time to kind of seclude ourselves in a cabin with no TV, no internet.
No telephone.
We brought up, like, you know, songbooks and recording equipment and our instruments. And from there, we started kind of working on different arrangements, practicing songs, and so on and so forth. But he started irritating the heck out of me because he said, it sounds, you know, I come up with something, he said, it sounds okay. And then I said, okay, so what do we do? I don't know. It just sounds too typical. So I think that's when the idea of really building a song and making it more than just a cover or even when we're doing original compositions and just doing the bare minimum, we really like to take the listeners and the audience members on a journey throughout the song. So we start playing off the different voices. We do key changes and so on. We sometimes will take an older song and add a bridge to it when there was never a bridge before. It was all about what's going to make this recording of this song, if it was a cover, which is very common for Hawaiian music because of the hula.
Correct.
Mm.
So what's going to make our version of this song different than everybody else's in the past?
I see. That sounds so cool. And of course, David, you came along a few years later. And so when you first met these guys, did you know them already?
I knew Kale from high school, college days.
Okay.
Matt, I met him the first recording session.
And you didn't like him?
No.
I said, where did he bring this guy in from? No.
Just kidding.
He wasn't typical.
I was actually a guest artist on when they were making the second album.
Okay.
So Kale calls me up. He goes, hey, man, been a long time. So are you doing anything right now? I'm like, no. And it was funny, the funny story. Now it's funny. But I actually signed my divorce papers that day. And I'm like, I was thinking about getting back into music. And so I'm like, no, I just signed my divorce papers today. And then Kale's like, congratulations. Mm-hmm. He goes, well, we're recording and working on an album. Wonder if you can come in and help us out. And I'm like, yeah, sure.
I'm available.
Yeah. Available now.
Yeah.
So I went into to the recording studio and I met Matt for the first time. And immediately, because his family is like, his name is recognizable. Any part of the Sproat family is famous in Hawaii, especially when it comes to storytelling and music.
Mm.
So that was a great thing to know about Matt. And then as I was playing and doing the best I could on the music that they gave me, they started showing me different songs on the album. Oh, this is what we're working on too. And I'm like, oh, this is so... To me, it was so out of the box.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Totally original. And I'm like, wow, this is great. Because I'm always like that, always trying to find new angles and approaches to making a different sound, especially when playing ukulele for so long. Only four strings, but you got to use your mind and your creativity to get different sounds out of it to match either a certain song or a genre. So
yeah,
that was really, I was really turned on by that. And then after the session, we just, you know, it was great working with you guys. And then I think it was about three weeks later, mm-hmm. Kale calls me and goes, oh, we're doing a gig at another one of our hotels in Waikiki. He goes, oh, do you want to come and sit in? I'm like, yeah, sure. It was a 2-hour gig. Then I sat in. And then a week went by after that. He goes, oh, do you want to join?
He never left.
Yeah, because we always explain on stage. He's like, yeah, Dave just stuck around. And
yeah, I love that.
Chicks in the mail.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, Matt, you have been a band for many years now then, and you have traveled all over. This is your first time to Alaska, though, right?
No, this is my second time to Alaska.
Okay, second time.
First time to Alaska was back in 2016.
Is it the band's first time, though?
Band's first time to Alaska, yes.
Okay, yeah, I guess that's where I was going with it. So in terms of, like, traveling the world, because I know that, like, when people hear, I think you mentioned this a little bit earlier, but when people hear Hawaiian music, mm-hmm. they have an image or a sound in their head, right?
Right, right.
And so you've been, like, subverting those expectations. So tomorrow night when people come to the concert, what can we expect? We heard a little bit, and we're going to play a little something as we leave, too, but what can we expect tomorrow night?
So I guess everyone's expectations I'm trying to look at it is from where you go, right? I mean, continental United States, still to this day, when the expectations of Hawaiian music still kind of Don Ho-ish.
Yeah.
In Hawaii, the idea of Hawaiian music always circumvents around hula, right? So that's how we use that word out of the box, because when you think of Hawaiian music, it's always an accompaniment to the hula. So there's certain standards that you have to stick by. And what we normally do when we go out of the box, we try to change things around, but still within the same counts and still in respecting the hula, but we do our own thing, right? So I guess what you're going to find with a concert tomorrow, you have three different people, three different musicians from three different parts of music that comes in together, and we add in our own style. You're going to find a lot of jazzy, swingy, but not in the expectation of what normally people would think of the 1920s jazz. It's a more of a kind of a Hawaiianized putting into, but utilizing a lot of swing music, because Hawaiian music was based around jazz and swing and also country western, believe it or not.
Yeah, wow, that's great. Yeah. Well, it's tomorrow night. It's at the Jack, and you can get tickets at jahc.org. It's part of the Golden Hour Concert Series, Waipuna. And help me, am I saying that 100% correctly?
Waipuna.
Waipuna, okay, yes. Waipuna. And they're awesome. It's Kale, Matt, and David, and they are here, and they are going to be rocking it tomorrow night. I think we're going to go out. I found another song that I wanted to play that I was listening to earlier. Maybe you can help me with the pronunciation. This is, it's K-U apostrophe U, and then P-A-P-A-L-E.
Ku'upapale. Ku'u means my, papale means my hat.
Okay.
So it's an old traditional Hawaiian hula song that we'll talk about my lauhala hat or a certain type of woven hat.
Awesome. That's so great. And of course, you can find more at waipunamusic.com. They've had tons of albums, and they're all over the streaming platforms
as well.
So you can go check out some of their music before you go to the concert tomorrow night at 7 p.m. Appreciate you being here. Thanks so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having
Mahalo.
Us.
Mahalo.
So here is Ku'upapale.
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 Ku'upapale. Thank you so much.
A ku'upapale, ka pono I ka po'o, ku'upapale lauhala. Hele ma'o, hele ma'ane I ku'upapale lauhala. Ku'upapale, ka pono I ka po'o, ku'upapale lauhala. Hele ma'o, hele ma'ane I ku'upapale lauhala. He papale holo holo kahakai, he papale mahi ai. Pale aku I ka vela o kala, aku papale lauhala. He papale holo holo kahakai, he papale mahi ai. Pale aku I ka vela o kala, a ku'upapale lauhala.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years. With cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juneau. More at heritagecoffee.com. This is Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. We're in Studio 2K live, and it's kind of like itsy-bitsy spider creepy season right now, and Ignite is a club at JDHS Yada'akathle that engages students in career and technical education through various hands-on projects. Their primary focus is on agriculture, and over the years, they have also started working with more exotic plants and animals. And last year they realized they had quite a few of these exotic creatures and thought it'd be fun to host a creepy crawly meet and greet for families to learn about and interact with these critters. Now, the 2024 Creepy Crawly Meet and Greet is this Wednesday, October 30th at JDHS from 5 to 7 p.m. And I'm joined now by two members of Ignite, Ken Z and Emma. Gunath Chi Sha'i Adi. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you here. Wasiyati, how's it going?
It's going good. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Emma?
Pretty good, yeah.
Okay, it's a Friday. You got out of Did you get out of school early to come to this or no?
Yes.
You did? Okay, well, good. I'm glad. It's always nice to be able to get out of school a little bit early, especially on a Friday. So tell us a little bit about the Ignite Club first. What is Ignite?
Yeah, okay. So you had already mentioned that it was a club that's focused on career and technical education. Right now we're focusing on agriculture and we handle a lot of exotic plants and animals. Different members do different things. We kind of just do whatever strikes our fancy. Like I mostly handle arthropods like millipedes, some roaches.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know how I got roped into that one. Other people do birds, snakes. It really just depends on what your interests are. We also host community events, such as the one coming up.
Yeah.
And, yeah, we build enclosures, do some research.
So how did you have an interest in sort of the, did you say millipedes? Did you have an interest in that somehow?
Yeah, I actually had to twist Mr. Anderson's arm a little bit to get him to invest in the millipedes.
And where did that come from in you? Was that something that happened to you as a younger person?
I have no idea, to be honest. I think I saw a video of millipedes and I was like, oh, those look really cute. They're kind of just like giant caterpillars. Not a lot of people agree with me, but I love them.
I love that. That's so fun. And Emma, is this still the club? Isn't it still like underneath the school, like in the basement somewhere, and they keep chickens and all these kinds of animals under there? Does that still exist?
There is still part of it under the school, but most of the meetings are actually held in Mr. Anderson's classroom.
Okay, I see. Because when I first heard about it a few years ago, I was like, really? There's like a whole, there's animals underneath the school. That's kind of fun. And Emma, what are you into?
I don't really like the millipedes. The
well, lucky for Kenzie then, right? Yeah. She's here to help you.
I do a little bit of stuff with the chickens sometimes, and I really like climbing inside of his big enclosure to help clean it and change out the plants.
I love that. Okay, and so this event next Wednesday, because chickens aren't that scary. They can be, I guess. They are sometimes are scary. But what are we going to be seeing next week? What kinds of things are we going to be having on display?
You'll see roaches, some worms, there's some axolotls, a bunch of...
Whoa, axolotls?
Yes.
What's that?
They're like a happy salamander. I don't really know how else to describe them.
A happy salamander, yeah, okay.
They come in pretty colors.
I love that. That's great. Yeah. Pretty colors. Okay, I've never heard of that. Mm-hmm. That's kind of fun. Okay, what else are we going to see?
The millipedes will be there.
The millipedes will be on display. Now, do people get to handle and or touch the animals?
Do you want to answer that question?
Yeah.
Yes, you can touch most of them. Some of them are a little bit too fragile to touch, of course.
Right. Especially the smaller bugs, I would think, right?
And the poisonous ones.
You don't want that happening. And this is for all ages?
Yes.
Yeah, it's definitely targeted towards smaller children, but anybody from any age is welcome. I mean, animals are for anyone, right?
Right, that's true, yeah. And what's the scariest animal that's going to be there? I guess that depends on everybody's individual. Yeah. I'm scared of spiders, for sure.
There will be spiders. Some toads, if you find toads scary. There's
maybe
roaches. I bet someone's going to bring in cockroaches.
I think roaches are just disgusting, right?
I don't know. They're pretty scary. Lots
but
of legs.
They do. They have lasted millenniums, right? Yep. That's the thing.
Might just crawl all over you.
They might. What are you most afraid of, Emma? Animal-wise.
I'm not really afraid of the animals. I am a little bit afraid of the snakes, though.
Snakes. Oh, so you're going to have some snakes there. Yeah. What kind of snakes? Anybody? Anything really scary or just like your little garden snake
Do you know what kind of snakes there are?
There are a couple of snakes. I know one of the snakes is Miss Nesheim's JoJo, and it kind of looks like she has a JoJo, like, written on her skin.
Okay. Yeah. That's kind of fun. Mm-hmm. Right on. Okay, and this is happening on Wednesday, and it's at 5 o'clock?
Five to seven.
5 to 7. Okay. And is it cost anything?
It is a free event, but there will be chances to donate.
Yeah. And there'll be chances to donate. Okay. And when people get involved in the club, do you know, folks, is this something that you're using to then go on to study, like, agriculture? Are you all interested in doing something in that field as you move on to college or post high school?
I feel like it could help also with that, or if you wanted to go into, like, veterinarians, you could also use your experience with animals to help you with that.
I see. Okay. What about you, Kenzie?
I am not planning on going into anything agriculture related, but I do want to study neuroscience and human behavior, and I feel like studying animals and how they behave could be a good segue into human behavior.
I see. Okay, that's kind of cool.
The psychology of it.
And if there is a high school student who would be interested in joining the club, how do they do that?
You just go to Mr. Anderson's class Wednesdays during enrichment. His class is 307.
Yes.
307. Awesome. That's so cool. This sounds like a really fun event. It sounds like it's going to get everybody involved for the next day, which is actually Halloween, but this is the day before. Mm-hmm. It's on Wednesday, October 30th. It's at JDHS, Yada'a Kafle. It's from 5 to 7 p.m. And so when I show up at the school, I can park somewhere. Where do I go?
Parking.
Well, hopefully it won't be as busy as it is during the day, but
right.
When I get there, I'm going to find a spot, I'm going to walk in, and is there going to be signs for me to know where to go?
To my knowledge, I'm pretty sure because it's after school hours, people will be allowed to park in staff parking lots as well as on the side of the road where students usually park.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's a pretty short walk. It's not that bad if you park on the side of the road.
And then when I get inside, what happens? There's going to be signs or something?
I guess so. Where is it held? Do you know? It's probably going to be in the commons, I bet.
You think it'll be right out in the commons? It'll all be set up right there when you walk in?
Yes, I'm guessing.
Yeah. We don't have to go to 307 is what I'm
probably
saying.
Probably not.
Right,
no.
Okay. That's good. All right, that's cool. Well, Kenzie, Emma, thank you so much for coming in and telling us about it. It's the 2024 Creepy Crawly Meet and Greet from the JDHS Ignite Club. And it sounds like it's really fun. It's going to be Wednesday, October 30th at JDHS from 5 to 7 p.m. And for more about the club, you can go to jdhsignite.weebly.com. Really appreciate you both being here today. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's have a star party. This is Steve Kosas with the Marie Drake Planetarium. I'm going to talk about the sunspot cycle. Since the 18th century, astronomers have been counting what are called sunspots on the sun. They're areas of lower temperature caused by the sun's magnetic field. They contrast with the background of the sun, and they go through a cycle. Every 8 to 14 years, averaging 11 years, they reach a maximum, and that maximum also coincides with more geomagnetic storms that send charged particles into space. And if those charged particles reach the Earth's atmosphere, pulled in by the magnetic field of the Earth and excite gases in the upper atmosphere, we have what's called the aurora. In the northern hemisphere, it's called the northern lights. In the southern hemisphere, the southern lights. The southern hemisphere is also called the aurora australis. In the northern hemisphere, it's called the aurora borealis. Now, when we see the aurora, it's typically green or white, but it's possible to see pretty much every color depending on what gases are excited by the charged particles from the sun. So the current sunspot max will reach its peak from November 2024 to March of 2025. So we can expect to see more northern lights and southern lights at this sunspot cycle max. It's the 25th sunspot cycle that's been recorded since the 18th century. This is Steve Kosas with the Marie Drake Planetarium. Our public shows are on our website at mariedrakeplanetarium.org. Thank you.
You're listening to community-supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm Boston Christopher. Joining me now in studio, Skylar Bear and Taylor Beard from the community storytelling event Mud Rooms. They are here to share some fun news on this month's workshop and more, and have a super secret, special, double secret probation announcement to make. So anyway, I was trying to think of that thing from Animal House where, you know, it's double secret probation, but then I was like, it's not really probation, it's more of an announcement. So it's like double secret announcement. I don't know. We'll get to it. But anyway, welcome. Happy Friday. This is a great way to end the Friday and the week. There's so many things happening this weekend. It's Halloween. But this month, there's no Mud Rooms, the event, but we're going to have a workshop, right? So we want to start with that?
Oh, yeah. Well, I guess I'm starting then.
Yeah. See, I told you I messed it all up. I had all these plans. And then I was like, no. We got to start with the workshop.
So the event that's coming up is on November 3rd, which is a Sunday. We tend to like to do workshops on Sundays, although we're open to suggestions from other people. 3 to 5 p.m. at the Alaska Robotics Center. We're changing up the location this time just to try something different. That was actually Taylor's idea. Thank you, Taylor.
Yeah.
And it's a two-hour workshop. It's free. Anyone can sign up. The sign-up's on the webpage. You don't have to sign up for this workshop and then tell a story in our shows, although you're welcome to. And it's really just to get people started. And it's a lot of fun. I really enjoy listening to everyone share what they started in the workshop with each other at the end. That's like one of the last exercises we do. And, you know, a lot of people who take the workshop and then do the shows do a really great job and tell really confident stories because they've gotten to practice and work on it ahead of time.
Yeah.
So I find it to be a lot of fun.
It's helpful, too, because the people who may be a little nervous about getting up in front of the big group, this is a way to sort of warm up to that and learn how to do it and get a practice run and talk with people who are there to help you and catch you when you fall and things like that. Which
is exactly.
Cool.
Low stakes environment, you know, no high pressure. And it's a lot of fun. And I love listening to other people's like ideas and frankly lives. And it's just a really great way. And it's free.
It's free.
It's so free.
Cool.
It's totally free. And the last one that we had like 15 people in it. And it was interesting because their enthusiasm for their stories, you could feel it ramp up as the workshop went on.
Nice.
So that was really nice. And you could see people's confidence growing and how they were telling it and telling it a little bit differently the next time. So it was good.
Okay. Yeah. Taylor, talk about what you were going to start with, which I know is going to be related to Monday night, right? We're going to hear the last month's event this Monday night.
We are. It's going to be at 7 p.m. on the 28th. It is the October show, which was our theme, Bones.
Right here on KTOO.
Yeah, it's a very good show. We raised over $2,000 for the Juno Ghostlight Theater. And there were some excellent stories, and I really think you would really enjoy it if you listen to it. They were fantastic stories. So please listen at 7 on Monday night.
Cool. Okay.
Yeah.
And what else you got?
The next show that we have coming up is on December 10th. That is a Tuesday night. It's at 7 p.m. So the theme then is Braver Than You Think, Stronger Than You Know. And this is stories of overcoming fears, surprising inner strength, unexpected court I know how to say the word courage. I do, I swear. Unexpected courage or stories of personal growth. I mean, it can be a pretty broad theme. So mm-hmm. we're still looking for storytellers on that. The beneficiary is, once again, the Juno Ghostlight Theater. And I encourage anybody who's considering telling a story to get in contact. And if they have questions, get in contact. We're happy to answer them. Think about coming to this to the storytelling workshop, because that'll only bolster your confidence for it. So I think that's the plan.
And tell me the theme once again.
Braver than you think, stronger than you know.
Braver than you think, stronger than you know. That's good to get people thinking about that, especially mm-hmm. if they want to maybe mm-hmm. sign up for the November 3rd workshop,
exactly.
right?
Exactly.
Start thinking about it mm-hmm. and what you might be able to put together for that.
Mm-hmm.
Braver than you think, stronger than you know. Those one-word themes are easy, right? Bones.
Yes.
And then it's so open. And this is actually kind of cool because it gives you a little bit of a direction, which is kind of nice. But it's still very open, I feel
yes.
like.
Yeah,
I
would say it's possible.
Yeah,
yeah. We try to do that with themes. We try to pick something that sounds solid but also broad. I'll just say I really pushed for the theme Bones for the October show. I call it the Halloween show, but the October show, because there's so many ways you can connect to that word. But I also think that a phrase like braver than you think, stronger than you know, I think that's pretty broad too.
Yeah, that's going to be so fun because it can be about, I mean, it's, oh man, there's so many things in that. That's mm-hmm. so great. I love that.
Yeah, it can be. Really anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, and the stories that people come up with and the way they connect it to the theme mm-hmm. is always just fantastic and amazing to hear. They're so fun. And so, and of course, you can tune in to the last month's episode again on Monday night, this coming Monday, the 28th, mm-hmm. Right here on KTO at 7 p.m. You can hear that. It's recorded and for all time. And there's also on the website, which I love still, mudrooms.org is the website. There's a history of mm-hmm. every story that's ever been told at Mudrooms, or pretty much every story. I would say 98%. I'm sure there's one or two that maybe haven't made it on there. But there's so many on there, so you can get inspired. You can go back and listen to those and mm-hmm. see what might be possible and get your courage up in terms of maybe wanting to tell a story, because they are still looking for storytellers.
Yes.
Okay, so now what's this super secret announcement that y'all want to make?
Okay, well, I'll start, but okay. Taylor is going to fill in as well. So there's been this idea bopping around, I don't know where it originated from, of having what's called a Smut Rooms show, a show that is...
After hours,
after hours,
and things you might not be willing to say in a church in front of a bunch of people. So you're going to say it instead at the Crystal front of a bunch of people.
Oh, Crystal. Okay, so it'll be at Crystal. So Mudrooms After Dark, basically.
Yes, so we have scheduled this for January 17th. We've already scheduled it ahead of time. That's how excited we are mm-hmm. In 2025 at 8 p.m. at the Crystal Saloon.
Should be like 11 p.m. I think 8's fine because it's always going to be so dark in January anyway,
it's
right?
Juno.
But yeah, that's true. And is there a particular theme for this?
Yeah. So we were going off of stories too risque to be told in the mudroom stage, but we were thinking along the lines of the seven deadly sins, because a lot of people think smut is just about sex, and it isn't mm-mm. necessarily just about sex. So it's really like along the lines of anything that you would be considered a vice, anything that could be really embarrassing that you wouldn't say. Like all of our mudrooms events, it's always a very positive audience that's very supportive, and I would imagine that the Smut Rooms audience will be exactly the same. So even if you're telling something embarrassing, something that you may not originally want to tell, like it's going to be a supportive audience. So I would say think along the lines of, you know, the seven deadly sins or any of the vices.
Which are?
The seven deadly sins are pride, greed, wrath, envy, lust, gluttony, and sloth.
Yes, so. I embody all of those.
I do too.
It's mudrooms.org is going to be the next event. There's a workshop on the 3rd. There's the event, storytelling event, with the theme Braver Than You Know, Stronger Than You Think.
Mm-hmm.
And that's in December. And then January, we'll go with Mudrooms After Dark. I really appreciate you both being here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be an exciting winter, it sounds like, for... 4 mudrooms.
Absolutely.
So, thank you so much. All right, that's going to do it for today's Juno Afternoon. We are going to go out with a little bit of Angie O from Playboy Spaceman with their happening with their album release party tomorrow night at the Crystal Saloon, where in January, that's where mudrooms will be. But normally it's over at the church, but in January it'll be there. Mm-hmm. So that's going to do it for Juno Afternoon for this week. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure. Gunath Cheesh for being here today.
Gunath Cheesh. Thank you.